Do you know what to do?
2, 1
Welcome into another episode of Slow Burn. You just can't get enough of us these days.
Nope.
We're back and better than ever. We've been gone for so long, you missed us for like a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're back, so hey, back. We weren't here for about 3 weeks, and now here you have us twice within a week.
What's that vine? It was back again with the, you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, Jeff, I can't do this without you knowing what I'm talking about. People will know what I'm talking about.
No.
It's the guy with the shoes. Back again with the, I forget his name, though.
No. The only thing I know about shoes are, what are those? That's it.
No, close enough.
Okay.
So this episode, we're going to talk about Dune. Last episode, we brought gave you all the trailers, all the movies that just came out, all the reviews, what we think about them, how good they're going to be, if we've seen them or not already, what you should expect. This episode, we're finally going to talk about Dune.
Finally.
I think the second episode we ever did for Slow Burn, we talked about movies we were anticipating.
This
was number one for both of us. We were so excited for it. It came out
4 weeks ago?
Yes, a month ago.
Yep. A month ago now. So we're finally talking about it.
Yep. It's funny because we had to wait forever on it because we were excited about it last year and it gets postponed literally an entire year to October.
Insane.
And we're like, wow. And then we finally get it and then we had to wait a month to do our podcast about it. But it's here.
Yes, it's here.
Finally.
So if you haven't seen it, spoilers ahead.
What are you doing?
Oh, if you haven't seen it, what are you doing? I thought you were talking to me.
Not
I was
you.
Like,
what?
Like, what did I do? If you haven't seen it, what Jess said, what are you doing? If you also haven't seen it, spoilers ahead. And if you haven't seen it, you have to go see it in a theater. This is one of those where I'm not as big as Jeff is on this, where you need to go see movies in theaters. I think it does help, but I think you can still get most of the same experience with a lot of movies at home if you get the setting right. This is, you definitely have to go see this. It's on HBO Max. Don't watch it on HBO Max until after you've seen it in theaters.
Please, yes.
I've done both. I've seen it on HBO Max and I've seen it in theaters. Theaters is just better.
I'm so glad to hear you say that because one of my questions for you was going to be, do you feel like it was a necessity to see it in theaters?
Necessity. This is one of those, when I first saw the initial reviews come out, it said, go see it in the biggest theater possible.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest screen, the loudest speakers, everything. And it definitely needs to be done that way. The landscape parts of the film, the soundtrack for the film, it just does not have the same feeling if you're not surround sound, giant picture. It just doesn't.
It enhances it so much. You really feel the scale of the movie. You feel how big it is.
It's so important. It's great. So my initial thoughts on this movie as well, getting out of the movie, was that this is going to be a new... It's going to be in the same vein as Star Wars. It's going to blow up because they've created a new universe. Denis Villeneuve. Oh, it's Denis.
Denis Villeneuve.
Ooh,
he's French Canadian.
Denis Villeneuve, the director, has created an entire world. He is, and granted, this world already existed if you've seen the 1980s one or if you've read the book.
Right.
But this is just on such a grand scale, and it creates a whole new universe, a whole new political hierarchy, everything. And so my initial take going out of the movie theater was that this is going to be the new thing, the new sci-fi thing, the new nerd thing, this is going to branch out, so many people doing cosplays, so many people doing different things. It's going to be just a cult following, a huge one though. Not like the cult followings you get from smaller scale movies or just little things. You're like, oh, they have like, you know, there's a following of people that just love this. This is going to be huge. That was my initial thoughts. So far, I think most people would agree that this is a great movie and that it's going to have a big following.
Yeah, you're right. The reviews on it, at least in terms of audience, are way higher than I expected because you talk about this being like the new Star Wars or whatever. To me, I didn't see it that way. Obviously, there are similar elements, but Star Wars is more of a, you know, faster pace, feel good, you know, family-friendly thing. And this is really dark and cynical in ways and very political. There's like, you know, you get a lot of political minutia that's like so imperative to the plot. And I just felt like it's way more bizarre than I expected. You know, there's so many strange sequences, like the part where Rebecca Ferguson's character is like whispering to herself when Timothy Chalamet has his hand in the box. You know, it's just so weird. And I really expected it to have a horrible audience score. I was thinking critics will love, audience will hate, and both are so high. I was really surprised by that.
So right now on Rotten Tomatoes, 82% critic, 90% audience.
That's crazy. I would have never guessed it would have been higher than the critic score.
I thought audience, well, going into it, like I said, I knew it wasn't going to be the family friendly. I knew it was going to be a darker, dramatic kind of space venture. What do they call it?
Space opera.
Opera. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. So I thought audience would love it. And just like I said, there's so many, we can talk, you know, normally with these movies lately, what we've been doing is we've been giving our favorite shot, favorite scene, favorite, you know, camera movement, whatever else, favorite line.
Right.
I didn't want to do that with this one because I could go literally almost shot by shot and be like, well, in this scene, this camera shot, perfect. You know,
it kind feels of thing. Like every frame could be a painting.
definitely. It really does. And like I said, he creates a new universe and he gives you this grand landscape, but also gives you very close-up shots, you know? And so I think that was great the way he did that. So let's go ahead and dive right in. Why don't you give me your kind of your favorite thing that you liked about Dune, whether it be a scene, whether it be what the director chose to do in this. Maybe it's just a soundtrack portion. What was your favorite thing that you liked about Dune?
Well, first of all, I will say this wasn't my favorite thing necessarily, but I think the performances around the board were incredible. Obviously, it has an A-list cast, and everybody brought their A-game. Like, I think everybody was totally committed and crushed it. I do wish Zendaya would have been in it more, but I know next movie will be hers.
Overall, yeah, we didn't even mention that. Just to mention that, we were going off the Star Wars thing that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. Denis Villeneuve wants to make... You like that? You
I
like
love that. That was nice.
He wants to make three. He thinks that will kind of wrap up the trilogy. The second one's already confirmed.
Yes.
So, obviously, there's going to be a third if Denis Villeneuve wants there to be a third.
Yeah, and, well, the first one made so much money, so there's definitely... He's going to get the whole trilogy, especially if the second one does as well. So, but anyways...
On to your favorite thing. We're talking about the invasion scene.
My favorite thing, it's got to be the invasion scene because we talked about the scale of it all, and this is why you want to see it in the theater, so something like this really hits. And I've discussed before on here about how, like, action scenes can get boring or kind of get on my nerves if there's no point, but this feels completely and perfectly designed and intentional. Every shot is perfect. The performances are great. It's just, like you said, he creates this world, and it just feels so lived in, and, like, you feel the explosions and the disaster of what's taking place to these people.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's one of those where you see, you know that some action is going to go down, some kind of thing is going to go down like that, but I guess you don't see it coming in at that part of the movie almost. Yeah. I mean, there is a buildup, so you know it's coming, but at the same time, it's just like the scale that it happens, and you don't see that literally everybody's going to die and that it's just going to be such a win, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm going to blank on what their names are, but the bad guys.
Yeah. I can't remember.
It's been a while since we've both seen
it's
it.
It's been a month.
I've seen it. I saw it in theaters and on HBO. Jeff just saw it in theaters once.
Can't wait to go see it again, though.
Harkonnen. I wrote it down. Harkonnen. You didn't expect such a big win for them in that. And like you said, on the scale of what was happening with it all was just insane. It looked like a full-on war. It looked like, you know, it's crazy.
Especially in the IMAX. You could, like, feel the sound, you know? It just felt so...
So going off of that, my favorite part's got to be the soundtrack. Just, I believe they said that Hans Zimmer, is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah, he created a new instrument.
Yes.
Somehow for this. I don't even know I don't know what that
cool.
means. Cool.
You know, he was in the movie as well.
I think I did know
he,
that.
He played the bagpipes coming
off
the
ship. Yes,
you
did tell me that. You did tell me that. Yes. So Hans Zimmer, he's already won an award for the soundtrack. I think it was like some kind of Hollywood award. It wasn't like a big award show, but he's obviously going to be nominated for everything because of the scale of this movie.
Yeah, you know, he turned down a Christopher Nolan to do the score for this movie.
I didn't know that. Which is surprising. Yeah. I feel like he would be right up Christopher Nolan's alley.
Yeah, well, he typically does collaborate with Nolan, so that's kind of surprising.
Yeah, so I mean, the soundtrack. We could talk about it forever. It's got that tribal feel to it, you know, throughout, and it gets very loud. My only problem with it, and I think I told you this, great soundtrack. Not a problem with the way it works. It's just that they have dialogue, and part of the soundtrack is so loud that I have, like, I thank God I watched it on HBO Max again with
subtitles.
No idea what they said in theater. I'm, like, straining, like, bent over, like, squinting, like, what are they saying? I had no clue.
It's funny I just mentioned Nolan because that was the same complaint people have with Tenet in theaters, is that you couldn't hear what was being said because of the soundtrack. So pretty interesting.
I mean, it's great. I understand. And, you know, the drums play such a huge part in the score and throughout, and they signify, you know, big moments and everything. What a score is supposed to do, basically, yeah, in a good movie. And it does. I like that he created a new instrument for it, if that makes sense, or a new feel for the, because obviously it's a space, it's supposed to be a new planet, Arrakis, it's supposed to be a new kind of everything. So I like the difference of it, if that makes sense.
The score is incredible.
Great. I think that was my favorite part.
Yeah.
I could go, there's several scenes that were really good to me. There's obviously the acting is so good. Rebecca Ferguson, I think, was the best performance.
Yeah, I agree. She's incredible in everything.
She's so, the fear that you see, especially, you know, you mentioned the scene earlier of when she's whispering. Again, no, I knew, and I know what she says now because yeah. I watched
music
on
is
HBO.
So loud in that scene.
No clue what she said in the theater. Like, not even a like hint.
Yeah, I still don't know what she said.
She's mentioning the Bene Gesserit there, how they talk about the fears, the mind killer. That's what she's saying during that scene. In case those who saw it in theater and have no idea, that's what she's saying. She's talking about fear is the mind killer. Don't let it be the mind killer. Don't let fear take you over, kind of thing like that. But the reason I like that scene, not just because she's whispering and you can't hear anything she says, but her fear that you see and the shaking you see, and it just feels so real to her that she's fearful for Paul, her son, when he's in that room with the Reverend Mother. I'm also, for the people listening, I'm also listening to the book right now, and where I'm at in the book is they're on Arrakis now. They've kind of gotten everything together, kind of, sort of. So that's where I'm at. So I've also gotten kind of a hint into other things in this, a little bit deeper understanding now.
That's cool.
So that kind of helps me know what she's talking about, too, because that's a theme.
That's interesting, though, because this movie actually doesn't even cover the entire first book.
Nope.
So if you keep listening, you're going to veer into territory in the second movie.
I'm sad that I'm going to veer, but I'm also, you know...
Excited?
Yeah, I'm excited. And it's similar to, you know... I was thinking of it in this aspect. I read all the Harry Potters before I saw the books. That didn't ruin the movies for me. I was still excited to see the movies.
Wait, before you saw the movies?
What'd I say?
You said before you saw the books.
Nope, I read the books before I saw the movies.
Yeah, okay, I did too, actually.
Yeah, I don't feel like that. I still like the movies, and it gave me a deeper understanding of the movies, and it lets you know, I guess that's for any movie kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know it. You know what the story is based on, but it's obviously plays out different in your head than it does out in the movie.
Yeah.
And I actually, how the book is going so far, it does not really describe looks of people very much. It doesn't. It's not a very descriptive in scenery or what the people look like or anything like that, or where they're at. Not very descriptive at all.
Not a J.R.R. Tolkien.
No. Not like super descriptive and all that. Yeah. So it helps a lot that I've seen the movie now because I can just vision it in my mind's eye of what it was like in the movie. So I might get lost when we get stuff I haven't seen or know about. I might get really lost in the book. So we'll see how it goes then. But it gives me a better understanding of everything. So I do want to touch on this, Jeff. I was confused when I saw the movie the first time as to why the Emperor was helping the Harkonnen at all, like how that became a thing. I guess I just missed like one line where they mention it. I know they kind of reference that this is a big deal that they're getting Arrakis from the Harkonnen, that the Atreides, I believe is how you pronounce it, their family is getting Arrakis. Or I guess Atreides is their last name. What was their family? Was it Atreides too?
I think so. That sounds right, yeah. Again, a lot of the names are hard to remember. Also been a month since we've both seen it, so people will forgive us if you mispronounce it.
People will forgive us, but this is what's happening.
Yes.
anyways, they reference that it's a big political win. It's a bigger win than you think about, and it's also very... There's a lot that's going to happen, basically. It's very... You're on the edge of something big that's going to break, and now whether that's them... gaining stuff. And you know, obviously you have Leo Atreides, played by Oscar Isaac, talk about how they want to make friends with the Fremen instead of doing what the Harkonnen did, it always oppressed the Fremen.
Right.
Now, when I heard that in the movie, my thinking was they're more humane than the Harkonnen, for one, and that they're just trying not to have to deal with it, and maybe they think if they help them, then they can actually get more spice production, help out the Emperor, who we don't know who it is. We never see the emperor, never. That just kind of is brought up out of nowhere that all these families are under one emperor. They never specifically, and I thought you would like this, Jeff, is they don't do a lot of exposition, I felt like, in this mm-hmm. movie. They do kind of, and it's not needed, so I don't think it was needed, the exposition, but they just kind of hint at things and then let you figure it out, let you assume or figure it out as you go along.
Yeah.
I was lost, though. I was like, why is the Emperor helping out the Harkonnen? Does he have a vendetta against Atreides? Is he just friends with the Harkonnen? Like, what's going on? Reading the book and rewatching the movie, it makes more sense that the Atreides family is gaining so much ground, and they have this fearful army led by Duncan Idaho and Gurney, that the Emperor fears that Atreides' family is going to make a play for the throne.
Yeah.
So he's fearful of them. And then also, I believe the Emperor found out that they are trying to make a pact with the Fremen and get the power of the Fremen. The book also specifically points out that they want to get the Fremen on their side to battle the Emperor's army. His feared, I forget what the warriors are called, mm-hmm. but his feared warriors that show up. They want the Fremen to be on their side to be able to fight those guys. So that was kind of, obviously the book spells it right out.
Yeah.
Whereas the movie, I don't feel like you ever get that specific thought process from Leo.
Yeah, I like how ambiguous that was as well. Also, mm-hmm. I think you could like ascertain from it maybe that obviously spice is just such a highly coveted delicacy, basically. You right. have to have it. And I thought maybe that played a factor as well. You know, if you can turn them, these two houses, against each other and have them tear each other apart, also it's, you know, less people that are trying to get the spice. So that's one way you could read it as well, I think. And there's obviously several other ways, but
the book does spell it out. Yeah. So if you were wondering, now you know.
Awesome.
That's why the Emperor is just trying to take it out. The Emperor is giving him so that they can take out the Atreides family, so that he doesn't have to worry about them making a run at his throne or anything like that. And they were. Leo was trying to make a run at his throne, is what was happening.
Yeah.
So there you go. Spelled it out for you.
Thanks.
So let's talk about, we talked about our favorite things, talked about what I was confused about, or I guess a big plot point there. What did you not like about it? Or what did you, let's phrase it this way, not necessarily not like, or you just didn't think was done well, or you would have done a different way? Was there anything in this movie that you saw that you were just like, why did they do that? Or why did they do it this way?
Honestly, I think this movie is, I think it's pretty great. Before, initially, I told you I needed time to process it after the next day.
Yeah, I wrote
and
it down.
One thing
and
I mentioned,
down.
I do think I said something about exposition, but the more I sat with it and thought about it, I think there is just enough that's necessary that gives you the vital information you have to have, but not too much. I think it's very well paced. Maybe there are some sections that could have been a little more.
It does have some slow moments, especially at the beginning when they're just building everything. But I think it's gotta, and I told you this when you told me the exposition thing, is I feel like there's needed exposition just because we're creating a new world.
Yeah.
Like, if you didn't read the book or see the other movie, you have no idea what's going on. We didn't either. So
yeah.
If they didn't explain that stuff, I would have had no idea. I would have been very lost and very confused.
Yeah.
It would have been Tenet all over again.
Tenet's great.
Tenet's a good movie. Were you not confused in the beginning and then made sense at the end? That's what would have happened to me if they did not do the explaining.
Well, I think like there is the section, maybe that's the slowest in the movie, where Rebecca Ferguson and Timothée Chalamet are basically deserted
Paul
together.
And Jessica, yeah.
So, and I think that part, you know, it kind of slows down because this is coming out of a pretty awesome battle sequence as well.
Rewatch if whenever you get the chance. Rewatch.
Oh, I'm
going
to rewatch it.
Yeah, you get a 40-minute span where it is breakneck speed.
Yeah.
Of stuff, so I appreciated
just a little breather.
Yeah,
little break.
A breather of a slow down moment of, okay, let's catch our breath before mm-hmm. we get to the next height here, you know, for a second. So, and
I think you touched on another thing. I do think, as amazing as the score is, it is overbearing in some sequences where you can't hear the dialogue. So that's something as well they could have tinkered with. But overall, I have no major complaints. I really enjoyed it. I like how strange it was. I feel like they took chances and really went for it. They weren't trying to appease anybody. They weren't trying to like appeal to a mainstream audience. I don't even think they were really trying to do like the stuff maybe Marvel does to, you know, bring in people to get money. I think Denis Villeneuve truly made the movie he wanted to make, because he said his whole life he's wanted to adapt this book, and that he finally got the chance to do it, and I think he did it the way he wanted, and I really respect that he went for it.
I think it's really helpful to this, too, is that this is... It's long enough ago from the first Dune movie, and the first Dune movie wasn't... It's got a cult following, like we said, but a smaller one, and it wasn't anything that launched off like Star Wars or anything like that.
Right, and I will say that movie was directed by David Lynch, who's one of my favorite filmmakers, and he has said numerous times that he disowns that movie. He said the studio took it from him. He said that is not his vision, and basically, from what I understand, Denis Villeneuve was like given the keys, and they said, drive, do whatever you want.
Yeah,
and
exactly. I think that helps, to your point. I think it just helps so much that this is... It's not... You're not a Marvel movie. You're not a Disney movie, right? Mm-hmm. You are your own, like, set. So you don't have to go out and appease these fans that already exist.
That's a good point,
Who cares about this small little cult following if you upset them or not from the... Maybe they love the movie, whatever. Mm-hmm. Who cares for those 30 people that exist? You're creating your own thing. So you're not... The studio's not saying, like, hey, they really liked this comedic section. Right. Let's steer more comedy here. Whereas Denis Villeneuve, to your point, said, like, he just was able to... make the movie he wanted to without backlash, no matter what. He could, I mean, the worst thing he could have done is just make it not follow the story at all.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
I think that's a great point. This is definitely, it is based on previous IP, obviously, the book, but it's not something that's oversaturated like comic book movies, which we get nonstop. It's, you know, it does feel a little fresh because we're not used to it. But you also mentioned the comedy. There's like very little, if any, comedy in this movie. So I found that very interesting as well.
I did too, because, you know, you see these major movies, even Star Wars and everything like that, they have comedic breaks. They have, you know, just jokes in there, just lighthearted stuff. There's not lighthearted in this movie pretty much at all. It's very serious, very dramatic, very, you know, this is the meaning of the world kind of thing. You know,
right. I appreciate that there was no forced comedy, though.
No, I agree. That's what I was saying, is that I feel like a lot of Marvel and Disney movies fail from the start, or the DC movies, we can point to those, that the reason some of those fail is they just have forced comedy in there because they're trying to copy the Marvel, the Avengers, where there's comedic breaks in there, and the forcing of it just ruins the rest of the drama that you've tried to create throughout. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. I even, honestly, even in the No Way Home trailer, there were a couple of jokes I felt were forced, literally just in the trailer, that I did not think were funny, and I think that's one thing Marvel could certainly improve on, and I'm glad it was not an issue in this movie.
So I have a few questions that I wrote down.
Okay.
Also, I'll go ahead and give my favorite line. I don't know if you remember this in there. I wrote down some notes the second time I watched it. I didn't want to write down notes in the theater. I wanted to fully immerse myself in the experience. I don't want to be writing down stuff. So we've already talked about all my notes too, so I just want to touch on some things that I wrote down. My favorite line is actually delivered by Gurney to Leo Atreides when they first get to Arrakis. And he says, "Do you know what they say about cleaning yourself here?" Do you know what he says?
I don't remember.
"To shower, you scrub your ass with sand."
Okay, now I remember.
that perfectly summed up Arrakis, because they obviously wear the still suits, sand everywhere, it's just a desert. That's all it is. I love that. I thought that was long. That was the only comedy that I could find in the movie.
Gotcha.
So there you go, I found it. Found it for you.
Should I give you my two favorite lines?
Yeah, oh, you wrote them down? Okay, yeah.
I do have these. Duncan says, "Dreams make good stories, but everything important happens when we're awake."
There we go. In the trailer as well. I like it.
And Lady Jessica says, "I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer." And I do believe that is a sequence as well. Is that what's being said?
Yeah, so that is the line. That's what she's whispering when he's got this hand in the box. And that is also from reading the book. That is like the Bene Gesserit, I believe is how you say it. That's like their motto, is like... And for those who don't know, and you probably don't if you haven't read the book, there's two... So there's the families. There's the emperor who rules all the families, right? There's two people or groups that are outside of the emperor's control.
Yeah.
And that is the Bene Gesserit, who do basically the emperor's bidding. They handle all the politics.
Yes.
But they also are truthsayers, as you see in the voice. The movie. They have the voice, but they can also tell if you're lying.
Yeah.
That's another key part. They don't really touch on that much in the movie. They say truthsayers once or twice, but they can tell if you're lying or not. That's just part of their abilities. And the other one is the Spacing Guild. Spacing Guild is their own people. Nobody's ever seen anybody from the Spacing Guild. At least that's the way in the book. They don't know if they're mutated. They just know that they're really good at math. That's all they know. You laugh, but that's what's said. So the Bene Gesserit, I believe that's one of their mottos is fear is the mind killer. And basically you just can't let fear get into your brain at all, because it ruins your thinking and going forward and everything like that. And they have so much training. They talk about the school that Jessica went to. They talk about Paul going through the training. Jessica's teaching him in the ways and everything like that. So that was my favorite line. I have a couple of questions that I noticed too. Just get your take on it, your theories on it. Obviously, we're going to figure it out as I get through the book. I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
And as we get to the new movies, I'm going to figure it out. But I just wanted your theories on it from right now. This is a question that might get answered. How does the voice work? Is it they can only control one person at a time, or can they literally control armies of people?
I have no idea, and I was literally wondering that while watching the movie.
Yeah, why doesn't Jessica just command the army to stop?
Yeah, because she seems...
And let's put it this way, other than deaf people, which we saw was immune, who's immune to the voice, obviously, is there any way to block it? You know?
It doesn't seem like there is a way, because obviously there's a crucial scene where they're able to escape because of the voice.
Yeah, so. And they know she has the voice.
Right.
Yeah, that's why they taped their mouths exactly. And everything like that. So I'm wondering if there's a way to block it or how many people can it affect.
I don't know. I hope if you do discover that's the book. Actually, I just want to wait, but I may read it as well.
Zach,
but
can spoil a lot for you.
Please don't. Because I will probably read it at some point.
Are the houses, so that they mention more houses, they never mention the names of more houses, though. There's Atreides and Harkonnen that we've seen in the movie, we've talked about. Are they all related somehow? Because the Baron calls Leto. Is it Leto or Leo? Leto. I've been saying Leo this whole time.
We know what you meant, though. Yeah, it's fine.
Leto. He calls him cousin. So I wonder if they're somehow all related in a way.
It would make sense. For sure.
That would make sense to me as well, like ancestrally related, not necessarily brothers or direct cousins, just how they all came to be. It also mentions in the book several times, and it mentions this in the movie too, the Bene Gesserit chooses how they have children, like how their members have children and who they line up with. And I actually mentioned in the book that none of the Bene Gesserit actually know their lineage.
Mm-hmm.
Only the Reverend Mother knows their lineage. So she matches them up based on how she wants political alignments, because they handle all the politics.
That is such a cool concept.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, maybe they've Harkonnen somehow with Atreides back in, they've related them somehow to get to this point, to then get to Paul becoming, I forget what word they call him, but the chosen one.
Exactly, yeah, that would make sense, because they're like, you know, playing a long game of chess or behind the scenes orchestrating everything.
One of the better lines too is, our plans are measured in centuries. That's what the Reverend Mother says. Yes. So I thought that was very interesting, obviously interesting concept as well.
So cool.
So that was another question, is are they all related? I think we talked about most of them. Oh, another question. Why does everyone use swords, not guns? We're like futuristic. We have spaceships. We have guns because we've seen them be used.
Yeah.
Everybody uses swords and knives and darts.
It's way cooler.
I mean, it's cooler action scenes, but
If you were a Star Wars character, are you going to use a blaster or a lightsaber?
If I am not trained in the Force, then I'm using a blaster.
But a lightsaber is so much cooler.
It's very cool, but you're going to tell me if you're not trained in the Force, you're going to block one of those? I mean, if it's try to, it's going to hit me. I'm dead.
That's a fair point.
Also, the shield is useless.
Yeah.
Useless.
Pretty much.
Useless. Why even have it?
It's not what you want.
It blocks it, but... when we see Leto get hit and he can't reach it, and he's dead.
that was rough.
Another one. I wrote Dennis or Denis. Sorry,
Denis. Yes,
loves his solar flares in this movie.
Oh yeah,
you need to go back and watch it. Every freaking shot, especially with Zendaya, there is a solar flare in that guy. So it is like every shot is like solar flare. Mm-hmm. Another solar flare.
It was so beautiful.
Solar flare transition.
Beautiful.
Though. It was great. It looked good. It was just funny. I was like, there's another one.
It's a page out of J.J. Abrams' playbook.
I guess so. I need you to see you do the sand walk. Write that down.
Yeah. I'm going to need to practice some more on that. That was, you know, that was interesting and pretty bizarre. That was one of the parts that were weird that I was like, I was mostly on board with everything else. So that one, it makes total sense, but it was just weird.
Lori made a great point. We watched this together. We watched it together in the theater and as well on HBO. We're wondering, because in the first scene you see the Baron. Mm-hmm. You see, you know, you don't really see him. He's in the steam. Also, it does point out in the book several times how fat the Baron is, so it makes sense that he's very fat in this too. They literally say, like, grossly fat when they're describing it for the first time. Mm-hmm. he mentions the emperor. He says the emperor is a jealous man when he's talking to his nephew about the emperor giving him soldiers and them going to invade Arrakis and everything like that. When he talks to his nephew about the plan, he says the emperor is a jealous man, and he touches the thing that's on his spine. There's like some kind of metal thing that runs up his spine. Maybe that's the thing that helps him float, you know, because he apparently floats.
Yeah, that was jarring as
bizarre,
well.
Very bizarre. Anyways, we're wondering if somehow the emperor has already punished the Harkonnen, the Baron, before. And maybe that's some kind of scarring, or maybe that's some kind of healing he had to do from the Emperor's punishment before. So that's why he knows the Emperor's a jealous man. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
She made a good point about that. I didn't notice that until the second time I saw it.
Why? Lori needs to be on the show more often.
She does. I completely agree. So another thing I noticed. They first get to Arrakis, and you see that all these people, not Fremen, but just Arrakeen people. Mm-hmm. So that's how they say it. They have these books. And they talk about how they are the religious books, and they're praising Paul and Lady Jessica, because they think Paul and Lady Jessica, one of those two, are the chosen ones, right? You also see Gurney read through a very similar book right when they're getting off the ship. So I'm wondering if he, and they never mention it, they never talk about anything, he's just flipping through this little book, and it's the same one. So I'm wondering if he's reading their religious texts to get some kind of edge, or maybe it's just that he is, maybe he's a believer, maybe he's part of it, you know, kind of thing. I just thought that was interesting. They never mention it. It literally is just one shot. They show a close-up of his fingers flipping through the book.
See, I love stuff like that, though. It's visual storytelling.
Again, you have to go rewatch it, because I was just so much, you know, the first time you see a movie to this scale, especially, you don't really notice all the little things, the little subtle points they make, you know, and everything like that.
So I can't wait to watch it again.
I believe that was about it. Trying to read here. Okay, this is another thing I liked. I liked and I didn't like. I guess more liked so than anything else. When Paul has a vision or a dream or whatever else, in moments they're so quick. They are flashes, literal
like frames.
Frames. Yeah. It keeps the viewer guessing, too, as if this is this a future thing? Like, is this going to happen in the future? Is this something just in a dream? Because you obviously see him in that last fight scene that Paul does. When he envisions it first, he dies. So you're like, well, is he going to die, kind of thing? Leaves the viewer guessing on what's real and what's not, kind of thing. And I love the flashes, too, because you don't even get a sense. You see a bloody hand a few times. You see bodies burning a few times, but you don't know what.
Yeah.
What is the context, you know, kind of thing. So I really liked that aspect of just continuing, even when you think you know what's going to happen, you don't know what's going to. It keeps you on your seat, you know.
For sure.
No matter what, you think Paul's going to live and, you know, get to the end or whatever, but they give you so many hints, like, nope, not gonna, he's gonna die, kind of thing, you know. And I think that's just about it, all I had. Do you have anything else to add?
Just that I can't wait to see it again, preferably in theaters. Definitely want to focus on some of the more, you know, obscure, nuanced things that you brought up. That was some very interesting stuff.
Last
there.
One that I noticed that I just saw.
Yeah.
Paul, I don't know if you noticed, several times when he's on Arrakis, he picks up sand and just kind of sifts it through his hand. It's close up on his hand. If you, at the beginning of the movie, after seeing it for the second time, he does this on Caladan too. He touches the grass, he touches the water, he lets that. And part of me thinks that, you know, it's just because he's leaving Caladan probably forever. So he wants to feel, you know, kind of, it's very different landscape, obviously, than Arrakis. But then it's just, it irked me, or not irked me, but it brought up something like, what is going on? Because he does that so many times on Arrakis, it just feels the sand almost. So I'm wondering if what Denis Villeneuve is trying to point out in the fact that he's grabbing. Is it just that he wants to feel the land? Is there something that he's connecting to the planet somehow? Is there some kind of power that he has that we don't know about?
I just took it as it were things that he had sensed or experienced, you know, in his dreams or in his visions, and he was kind of like trying to put the pieces together, you know?
Feel if it's real, maybe. Maybe he's just trying to ground himself, feel if it's real or not.
Exactly.
That was another thing that I noticed. He does it on Caladan as well, so I thought that was interesting. I think that was about it.
Yeah.
I could talk about this movie for days.
Yeah, the only thing we haven't touched on that's, I would say, pivotal is the design of the sandworms, because they're, from what I understand, they're obviously just so essential to this story and to the books, and I feel like the people in charge of designing this had so much pressure and so much at stake because this has to look awesome. And it could look so cheesy. And I think they killed it. I think just the scale of it all and the way it's shot, every sequence with the sandworm is incredible.
Yeah. The teeth remind me, when you see the teeth, they remind me of Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, when Johnny Depp gets eaten by the Kraken.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that. And then it also, of course, reminds me of, I forget what they're called in Star Wars.
The Sarlacc?
Sarlacc pit.
Yeah.
Sarlacc pit and Kraken combined. That's what I got.
Maybe that's what they went for, you know?
They got the teeth of the Kraken for sure, with the rows and the lines and the, you know, everything like that. And the kind of, you could see in that one close-up shot when they narrowly miss him, you can see its, you know, throat, I guess, opening and closing. I guess that's what that was. That's very similar to what they did with the Dead Man's Chest with the Kraken eating Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Sarlacc pit. It's a Sarlacc. It's a Sarlacc pit.
Yeah.
That's what the Sarlaccs are. It's just the sandworms. So, well, that I think that'll wrap it up for Dune. Let's give our reviews.
Yep.
I actually wrote in here because Jeff did say he needed some time to... He's like, I liked it, but not as much as other people. I was like,
I mean,
how did you not?
Yeah.
So obviously he had some time to process, and he does really like the movie, wants to watch it again and everything like that. I'll probably give it a 95, and we can make jokes about my 98 Suicide
Not
Squad.
As high as your Suicide.
Go ahead. We can make jokes about it. We're going to forever joke about that. Yeah. Whatever. Great movie, Suicide Squad. But I really, really like this movie. I could rewatch it 100 times. I'm really enjoying reading the book, even though like I know everything that's happening so far. Mm-hmm. It's super interesting to hear it more in detail and just kind of go back through it again and get more details about it. I'm just invested in the storyline at this point.
Yeah.
So I'll probably give it a 95. I mean, I really don't think they could do anything much better. I guess the only thing is it's not a part of me likes feel good movies. Like, you don't always love to see the dramatic, and it's almost to the point of similar to Empire, where the bad guys feel like they win in this movie. You know what I'm saying? So you don't get that triumphant.
I typically
ending.
Love that. Though.
I know, because you're. Because you're Jeff.
I guess.
Yeah, because you're satanic. Okay.
I wouldn't say that. Jeez. For me, I would give this movie an 85.
Okay.
And I think...
15 points.
I think when I have it that low... Well, I wouldn't even say that's low at all. It's a great score. But for me, it's on the lower end of Denis Villeneuve's movies. Like, I think he's got...
So Arrival is better.
I think Arrival is better.
Better?
I think Prisoners is better. I think Blade Runner 2049 is
Prisoners,
better.
Prisoners is a great movie.
Amazing.
Great
and
movie.
Pretty demented. But.
But that's what I'm saying. It's just like so dark, and it's not.
No.
Well, eventually we're going to do a video recording because I just want to see people see your facial expressions when you say, I know.
Like, they don't want to
so
see
excited.
That.
Everybody wants to see your facial expressions.
But I think when I see this movie again, my score is going to skyrocket.
I think it will. I honestly think it will. I think when you see the more of the nuances of it too.
I bet.
Just because it's one of those movies where it'll get better the more you see it, just because you realize more things.
And the only reason I haven't rewatched it is just because I want to see it in theaters again.
I'd recommend HBO. Just hear the subtitles.
Yeah.
I recommend just see the difference.
Yeah.
If you're seeing it for the first time, definitely theaters, right?
Please. Yes.
Definitely theaters.
You have to. Don't watch it on a phone or a laptop.
Don't watch it on your TV. Go to theater. Go to watch it in theater.
Yes.
But second time, HBO Max is good just because you definitely, there's a difference.
There really is.
This is one of those where it's a difference. But no, I can't believe that. Nothing is better than 2049. You think this 2049 is better?
I loved 2049.
I mean, I love it,
and I'm
it
a
too.
Huge Ryan Gosling fan.
I love Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford. They are both top 20 actors for me.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not going to name them all, but I don't even know my top 20. But that, like, that just didn't. I don't want to put them too high. I don't want to put them too low.
Yeah, I got you.
I think this is better.
Again, I got to watch it again. I got to watch it again. But
it's definitely more fast paced than 2049. 2049, well, maybe that's why you like it. Slow burn.
Yeah, exactly.
Very slow burn, exactly. 2049. So maybe that's what it is. But anything else to add before
that's
we let people go?
That's all I got, man.
I definitely rambled on way too much about this movie, but again, I can talk
you love
about it.
It that's
for
awesome.
Days. Yeah, talk about it for days. Great movie, great epic, ready for the second one, ready to keep reading the book and go from there. And I think that'll do it. And we will see you guys. I think Jeff actually will
see you guys next
solo
week.
Host it. Or maybe he'll have a co-host.
Oh, I'll have a special guest.
Special guest. Jeff will have a special guest next week, and he will be with you guys for Thanksgiving. I will be peaced out at the beach, and then I will be back in 2 weeks. I cannot wait to listen to you and your special guest do an episode without me, Jeff.
It's going to be great. It'll be the best one.
You already tried to sabotage the show with me on it. So I
disappeared
for
a week. You pulled me back, imprisoned me, made me do it. But
for a week?
3 weeks.
There you go.
Tried to sneak that in there.
For the people, Jeff. Yes. For the people. All right. Well, love you guys.